It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferrett. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a Wisconsin writer tells us why the Packers helped power up the workers at the Oscar Mayer plant and what might be lost now that that plant has shut down for good.
First Secretary of State Rex Tillerson announced cuts to the Special Envoy program, including getting rid of special envoys for Syria, Sudan, and the Arctic. And two legal nonprofits filed a lawsuit challenging President Trump's ban on transgender people enlisting in the military.
Outside of Washington, President Trump visited Texas yesterday as flooding from Hurricane Harvey continues to ravage that state. And here in Wisconsin, DNR Secretary Kathy Stepp announced that she's moving on to work at the EPA.
Craig Gilbert is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Craig, welcome back.
Nice to be with you.
And I want to start with President Trump's visit to Texas yesterday. Here he is in Corpus Christi, addressing a crowd gathered outside a firehouse.
Thank you, everybody. I just want to say we love you. You are special. We're here to take care. It's going well. And I want to thank you for coming out. We're going to get you back and operating immediately. Thank you, everybody. What a crowd. What a turnout. I want to thank our governor. Your governor has done a fantastic job. Governor Abbott, thank you very much. Who's right here someplace? He's right here. So we just want to thank your governor, Senator Cruz, Senator Cornyn, everybody, Dan. We want to thank the whole group. This has been a total cooperative effort. Again, we will see you soon. I will tell you, this is historic. It's epic what happened. But you know what? It happened in Texas, and Texas can handle anything. Thank you all, folks. Thank you. Thank you.
And there is the bulk of what the president said. Craig, what kind of reviews is the president getting for his visit? What are people saying?
They're definitely mixed. I mean, the chief criticism that's emerged from that visit is that the president, and not just from Democrats, but from some Republicans too, that the president kind of failed to show much empathy, that part of his job was to really kind of reach out to the victims of the flooding and express, you know, his concern for them and communicate that over and over again. The criticism is that he just kind of treated it more like almost, you know, like a typical political stop and marveling at the crowds, and that he kind of made it more about him than about what had happened.
And he didn't actually meet with any victims.
Yeah, now that may come. And again, I do think, I think some of the criticism is fair, but I also think we have to be careful about, I think we have to be cautious about kind of second-guessing and critiquing these kinds of appearances by presidents on, in disaster areas, because we've seen many presidents sort of get it from both directions. You know, if you go, you're inserting yourself for political reasons into a disaster area. If you don't go, you're being indifferent. You're showing your indifference to it. And of course, the debates over kind of when the president does go, over the Tony strikes, over where he goes. So I think this is kind of an unfolding situation. I think he's going to go back to Texas. I think the book will be. He hasn't been closed yet on kind of certainly far from closed on how he sort of handled this crisis. But I do think you saw so far, at least, you know, some kind of classic Trump stylistic touches in the way he talked about it.
And President Trump did thank the governor, say the governor had done a fantastic job, but he also said at other points that he didn't want to congratulate the effort for being, you know, perfect, getting the job done yet. He wanted to wait until the job was finished and then comment on it.
Yeah, and you have to be careful about being self-congratulatory while a crisis is still unfolding. These things are unpredictable. I mean, you know, we've seen what happened to Houston, and now we can see that Port Arthur, Texas, is having a lot of problems. We haven't seen the end of that yet. And you've got the president today talking about tax reform at the same time this crisis is still unfolding. So it's very tricky. Again, I think you have to be a little bit cautious about how you kind of unpack these, you know, these presidential visits and everything about the president's rhetoric. But I think another interesting issue, which may be more interesting than the president's handling of the crisis, is also how Congress is going to handle it. Because, you know, we've had comparisons already being made to Superstorm Sandy in the Northeast, where a lot of Republican members of Congress, including many from Texas, voted against disaster aid, and now, of course, are seeking disaster aid for their state in the middle of this crisis. So it's going to be interesting to watch that debate unfold and watch how Congress treats funding for disaster funding for Texas, and people will be comparing that very closely to Sandy.
We're talking to Craig Gilbert right now, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And as you were saying, you know, the president, it seems, has taken some lessons. George W. Bush took some heat for his response to Katrina for maybe being congratulatory too early. But Ari Fleischer was the press secretary for former President George W. Bush, and he had this to say last night on Fox News.
There was something missing from what President Trump said. I hope he will say it later today. But that's the empathy for the people who suffer. That, in my opinion, should have been the first thing he should have said, was that his heart goes out to those people in Houston who are going through this, and that the government is here to help them to recover from this. And then secondly, the job of the president is to thank those who are the first responders doing all the rescuing. You know, that is a huge morale boost to those working so hard away from their families. Their homes are often flooded, but they're sacrificing themselves to save others, and the president needs to thank them. That's what a presidential visit can accomplish.
Ari Fleischer there. And Craig, you're saying we got to wait and see. What are you looking for in terms of a follow-up for President Trump?
Well, you know, you can see actually he's already on Twitter has tried to sort of, I think, deflect some of that criticism in at least one of his tweets this morning to the people of Houston. I think an effort to kind of express that empathy that he's been criticized for not expressing on his trip. I mean, it was interesting, you know, Ari Fleischer wasn't the only Republican. He wasn't the only former Bush official who kind of offered that critique of President Trump. And again, you know, someone will be able to write a book when this is all said and done about how presidents respond to crises like this and crisis management and the political and rhetorical management of these crises, because, of course, President Bush, you know, is seen as having made a mistake in his response to Katrina that no subsequent president, you know, will want to make, which is not to respond, to under-respond, to appear to be too distant. And then so obviously we've seen President Obama handle Sandy in a different way, and now President Trump handle Harvey in a very different way. He went there. He'll probably go back there, but I think you know, people are going to be evaluating the tone and tenor of his response and his words, as they do with every aspect of his presidency for days to come.
So, Craig, moving on to other news out of Washington, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is making some pretty significant changes to the Special Envoy Program. Can you tell us what he has in mind?
Yeah, they've reduced some of the. There are special envoys of the State Department, which are kind of not part of the conventional, you know, structure of the State Department, where you have obviously you have ambassadors to all the different countries, and you have regional diplomatic positions. And these are special envoys are people that are hired kind of from the outside. Often, Russ Feingold was a special envoy to the Great Lakes region of Africa after he served in the Senate. Where there's a sense that there's a special problem in the world. It doesn't have to be a geographic area. It could be just an issue like AIDS, or it could be a part of the world where there's a crisis. And it's a way of focusing special attention and special effort on a special problem, international problem. There has been debate, I think, and it's not just partisan. It's on both sides of the aisle over whether there are too many special envoys. I mean, these are sort of organizational issues, but and there's merits, I believe, on both sides of the argument, but there's sort of the larger context. The reason I think it's a sensitive issue right now is because there's a broader context, which is that President Trump is proposing, you know, 30% reduction in State Department funding, including a 40% reduction in U.S. Agency for International Development, an agency, incidentally, now headed by former Wisconsin Congressman Mark Green, who I sat down with last week and talked about his taking over the reins at USAID. So there are people within the State Department and people who've been appointed by President Trump who are kind of dealing in a world of deep proposed cuts in funding. And so I think for people concerned about that, the concern about something like this is that it represents sort of a retrenchment. We'll have to see how that unfolds. I think that the whole question of funding of the State Department and funding of international aid is really in the lap of Congress now, and there's a sense that while there may be cuts, Congress, neither Republicans nor Democrats in Congress, are going to support the scale of cuts that President Trump has proposed.
We're taking a look back at the week in Washington with Craig Gilbert. He's the Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the president's response to Hurricane Harvey so far? What would you like to see him and the federal government do in the coming weeks and months? Are you concerned about this reduction in special envoys? Are international relations and cooperation a priority for you? Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll be back in just a bit and take your calls. Stay with us here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're taking a look at the week in Washington right now with Craig Gilbert. He's the Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like President Trump has tried to reach out beyond his base, or has he hunkered down? Are you part of that base? Are you still happy with the president's performance? Do you see opportunities taken or missed? And what would it take to improve his approval rating and poll numbers? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Craig, about a month ago, President Trump announced that he was banning transgender people from enlisting in the military. Seemed maybe to catch some military leaders off guard. He did make it official late last week by signing a memo to the Pentagon and the Department of Homeland Security. On August 9th, the president had this to say about his decision.
The transgender, the military is working on it now. They're doing the work. It's been a very difficult situation. And I think I'm doing a lot of people a favor by coming out and just saying it. As you know, it's been a very complicated issue for the military. It's been a very confusing issue for the military. And I think I'm doing the military a great favor.
And Craig, there has just this week been a lawsuit filed challenging that ban. Who's bringing the lawsuit?
The ACLU is bringing the lawsuit. I mean, it was very predictable that once the president announced this ban on Twitter, that there would be litigation over it for all the obvious reasons. I mean, what caught people off guard about it was there has been a controversy, particularly in Congress, over whether the Pentagon should fund medical bills associated with sex change treatment and therapy. Not really so much over whether transgendered people should be able to serve or should be able to continue to serve. And so President Trump went way beyond the medical issue and the insurance issue in announcing his ban. That caught the military off guard. You've not only seen litigation now on the part of the ACLU, which, again, I think we all could have foreseen, but the Pentagon has announced that it's going to study this issue, and which means that they're not going to immediately implement any kind of a ban. The transgender people in the military will continue to serve in the military while there's more analysis and more study, obviously the kind of study and analysis that hadn't been done in the run-up to the president's announcement.
In his reasoning in that initial announcement, the president said he was making this shift because of the medical costs, which you mentioned. He also said because it had become a distraction to the military.
Yeah, and again, you'd have to hear that from people in the military. From what I understand, there was not a great clamor within the brass at the Pentagon to go this far and to make this particular move. Obviously, it's a move that comes with its own disruption and cost. So you'd have to weigh that, and they would want to weigh that against whatever institutional benefits they think they're getting from taking a step like this. It's hugely controversial, and it's, you know, obviously debatable legally, and so that's ultimately, well, looking beyond whatever comes out of this further review and analysis by the Pentagon, and they're going to be doing it under the shadow of this litigation and mindful of this litigation, and then you could have the issue playing out in court as well.
And Craig, I want to turn now to a piece that you wrote looking at whether President Trump has been able to broaden his base of support since he took office. He came in with pretty low numbers, which you say gave him a lot of room to go up. Has it worked out that way?
Not really. I mean, you know, one of the most striking things about President Trump's victory, and he did win in places like Wisconsin with very high negatives. I mean, he had them throughout the campaign. The polls were right about that. I mean, on the exit poll, which is the poll of voters taken on the day of the election, I think the percentage of people in Wisconsin that had a negative view of him was something like 60%, yet he carried the state with less than 50%. But he won the election with those negatives. But at that point, it's not an issue about winning an election anymore and defeating an unpopular opponent in Hillary Clinton. It's an issue of governing. And so I think it was incumbent upon him to try to broaden his base of support. It's very difficult to govern when a large majority of people have a negative view of you, and yet we've seen him, after an initial uptick, we've seen him, his approval ratings and his favorability rating kind of drop at about 1 point a month in his first term. He's down around the mid to high 30s, so he's got the worst sort of first year ratings of any president in sort of in modern polling. But most strikingly to me was that a sense of lost opportunity, that even though he came into office with high negatives, there were clearly people that voted for him despite qualms and despite maybe their reservations about his rhetoric and his style and maybe even some of his policies, but who wanted him to succeed. I mean, after all, they voted for him. But there's not a lot of evidence in the polling that he's expanded his base of support. In fact, some groups that voted against him in Wisconsin overwhelmingly, like women and college grads and young people, are now as negative or more negative than ever toward him compared to where they were in the campaign. I mean, just to pick out one number, his positive rating among women in Wisconsin in one recent poll was in the low 20s, and his negative rating was around 70%. And that, again, that we're talking about more than half of the electorate, a demographic group without regard to party. With those kinds of numbers, it's very difficult to get anywhere near treading water in public opinion.
And how are his numbers holding with groups that help elect him, groups like men and older voters and blue-collar whites?
Well, even there, I mean, he slipped among some of those groups, not among all of them. But if you just take, for example, one group that is typically viewed as his demographic base, which is blue-collar whites, which is shorthand for whites who don't have a four-year college degree, a group that, by the way, favored him by 28 points in the election in Wisconsin over Hillary Clinton, his approval rating is something like 38%. He's in the mid to high 30s in terms of his personal popularity and his job approval rating. So he's underwater with really a group that should be favorable to him demographically. That's a problem for him. In fact, President Obama still has a positive rating from these same blue-collar whites who helped elect Donald Trump in Wisconsin, but Donald Trump has a negative rating. And Republicans, I mean, you know, a quarter to a fifth of Republicans either disapproving or having negative views, and even more having deep reservations about how he's handled the office in the same polling. Those are all pretty alarming numbers, numbers we're not used to seeing. Again, one of the points I make in the article is that we are so polarized today along party lines that each president that gets elected is more polarizing than the last, and that means that in order to succeed, the one thing you cannot afford is to have even a small minority in your own party disapprove of you, because you can pretty much count on the fact that almost every voter and almost every politician in the other party will be unfavorable, will be disapproving, will be against you. You need almost unanimous support from with your own party, and so that's why these numbers are also alarming on that score for President Trump.
And Craig, moving to our last story today, we got word yesterday that Wisconsin Secretary of the Department of Natural Resources, Kathy Stepp, is leaving. She's taking a job with the EPA and has said, quote, we here in Wisconsin, that's my words, not her, we've demonstrated how we can have job creation and environmental protection. How does that square with the EPA's shaping up under the Trump presidency?
Well, you know, she's dealt with some of the same debates that the EPA under President Trump is dealing with. In fact, probably those debates are, if anything, more acute with the EPA right now, because it's being led by a very aggressive past critic of the agency, Scott Pruitt, who is seen by environmentalists and people within the EPA, meaning career people, as almost dismantling the agency. So there's a huge debate within the EPA and outside the EPA over what's happening at the EPA, which is part of obviously a longer running debate about how you strike the balance between environmental protection and economic development. But when it comes to striking that balance, obviously President Trump is in a different place than President Obama was, and probably to some degree even than President Bush was before him. So at the Wisconsin version of the EPA where Kathy Stepp was in under Governor Walker, some of these same debates unfolded. Her critics and the environmental community saw her as not being strong enough on the environment and not being strong enough on enforcement. These are the same kinds of criticisms that President Trump's EPA is fielding. So whichever side of that debate you find yourself on, it's the same debate, really.
Craig, thanks a lot. We'll catch you next time.
Anytime.
That was Craig Gilbert, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he joined us to take a look at some of the biggest news stories out of Washington this week. And you can check out his article about whether President Trump's base of support, what's happening with that. You can read that on the Central Time Facebook page.